welcome to Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a program dedicated to biblical truth and prophecy featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch, another Messiah's Branch national satellite radio program. We're broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. The broadcast date for this program is April 7, 2013. Folks, if you need any help after this program, call me. If the program upsets you, you need anything, call me. If you need a prayer, you can also call me. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, or message, whatever that might be. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682, 620-878-4682. And, of course, I always give out my cell phone number for in case of emergency. My cell phone number is 316-619-4886, 316-619-4886. And I had another fellow I had on tell me, folks, that when I gave my cell phone number, I gave up my right to privacy. Well, I'm here for you. But anyway, folks, you can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, our radio program, the archives. All these things can be found at our blog, which is prophecyhour.com, and that's prophecyhour.com. And for sure, folks, though, there's a lot of you folks that listen to radio that still don't do internet. In fact, I've got a friend that I went to school with, you know, grade school and junior high with, and I ran into him not long ago, and he doesn't even have a cell phone. And so I know a lot of you folks out there still don't do the internet. You just listen to radio. So if there's anything that you may need from me, you can just feel free to call me about anything. Now, prayer, and we'll get on with tonight's very important program. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray, Father, I pray that radio goes tonight according to your will and not my will, nor my guest's will, but your will, Father, and please give us all ears and wish to hear the truth. Amen and amen. Well, tonight we have author F. Michael Maloff back with us tonight. He spoke with us before about his book, A Nation Forsaken, EMP, The Escalating Threat of an American Catastrophe. And judging from all of the back programs that you folks downloaded about that, I pray that you are one of those that heard him before. If not, you can go to our radio archives and simply look it up and play it. You folks that listen on radio and don't do the internet, if you call me, I'll freely send you a CD with that program on it, or this program. Anyway, he's a staff writer for WorldNet Daily and G2 Bulletin. He's a former senior security policy analyst in the office of the Secretary of Defense. That's for the United States. We brought him back on due to this escalating trouble with North Korea, and so now let's get him on. Michael, I'm really glad to have you back on with me.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, you know, when we were on talking before and you were talking about your book, I didn't realize that we may be right back on talking about something that basically your book was telling us about. So you want to go into this North Korea thing?
I mean, sure. Well, the book was written with that with North Korea and other countries with missile and nuclear capability in mind, and in terms of an EMP, electromagnetic pulse attack on the United States, and now we're seeing this possibly with the threat of a preemptive nuclear strike. This is something that North Korea is assessed to be able to do and to be able to at least has the capability, and to what extent they would actually carry it out is another issue. But they have all of the ingredients, and now we're as we speak, this the tensions on the Korean Peninsula are intensifying by the hour.
Yeah, absolutely. I post a lot of articles up at prophecyhour.com, and I was, you know, trying to keep up on it, but, you know, I've been using the Drudge Report in other places, mm-hmm. and there seems like there's something new coming about out every half hour or so,
mm-hmm.
and so it seems to be really escalating. They said they were sending a missile defense system to Guam, so it looks like we're really taking this serious. Are we?
Yeah, we are. We, in addition to what you just mentioned to Guam, we've actually sent a warship with an Aegis system to Japan because the Japanese have been threatened. That's an anti-ballistic missile system. We have two additional destroyers coming into the area that also similarly are anti-missiles. We got we certainly have assets in Japan itself as well as in Korea. But in addition, we have the capability of flying the B-52s and the B-2s that Kim Jong Un was so concerned about. Those can fly in at almost any time.
Right.
So they wouldn't land in Korea. They would just make a round trip. But the capability is there. We have the power projection. He does not. The only concern is one of the concerns I have, in addition to him immediately doing something with South Korea, would be looking at his space vehicles, space launch vehicles. These are the three stagers that he recently tested back in December, I believe, and then he did a nuclear test in February. And when you combine the two, the capability is there for him to do a rough form of an EMP attack if he so chooses, and if he has that technical capability that we're concerned about now. Even U.S. Defense Secretary Hagel has also raised concerns about his nuclear capability. So it's not just wishful thinking; it's something that we have to be concerned about. And I've also been in touch with U.S. officials, and they privately, particularly in the intelligence community, they privately voice concerns of this potential for an EMP attack on his part. And this is. This is probably countries such as North Korea, a very poor country, relatively speaking, not very technically advanced, would do in terms of asymmetrical warfare, and that is to go after what is our most vulnerable point, and that would be our national grid system, and an EMP from a high altitude explosion certainly would be one way of doing that. And if you also recall, right after he conducted the third nuclear test, which we believe was for miniaturization, of a nuclear warhead to be able to fit onto a missile, he immediately started going public with talking about a preemptive nuclear strike on the United States, and then he issued a series of videos which show a nuclear attack on the United States.
Right, absolutely. A couple of points, but first point I'm going to ask is that does it seem like that we've totally ignored this? We brought this out in your book. There's a lot that we could have did, but we haven't did anything. Why do you think that we are so, you know?
Well, I think people just didn't think, first of all, no one was focusing on it. No one thought he really had the capability. Ability to gather intelligence in that part of the world, given that it's a closed society, is very, very minimal, very difficult. And all we can go on, mainly from an intelligence standpoint, would be assessments based upon judgments. It isn't just that he did this underground nuclear explosion, which he was very proud of. The fact that he was so blustery about it right after that test indicated to me that whatever test he did conduct was successful, and that's why he probably then felt that he could start engaging in public bellicose rhetoric that he's been doing ever since.
Well, so there bears the question. You know, that seems almost insane. I mean, right, he might be able to pull a first strike on us or whatever with the space vehicle, but we have enough capability just to make, you know, North Korea a great big hole. So why, what kind of mental state is this man in?
I mean, well, I think a lot of it has been posturing to try and win the confidence and the backing of his military, his own military. They're always skeptical. The military is divided. They've never here. You got a 28-year-old. He's now the supreme commander and the supreme leader, with the rank of marshal. And you know, his father before him was not particularly embraced by the military either. But I think he. And there's been statements to this effect that he has felt that he needed to show that he was stronger than his father, and with respect to the military, and that's what I think all of the all of this is stemming from. Now he's using the joint the annual joint U.S. South Korean military exercise as a basis for. Declaring that he's going to launch a preemptive strike because he feels that with that B-2 bombing run that occurred, that it was a sign that the United States has intentions of engaging in a nuclear conflict on the North Koreans, and that's what got him all spun up.
Right. Okay. Well, let's go like this. Other than the fact, and want to bring up that, remind me to bring that up, he has capabilities, if he did a first strike, to with just regular weapons to really hurt South Korea before
That's
we
correct.
Can stop him. And we need to bring that out. But first thing I would like to know, and, you know, folks, you need to get this book, and tell them the name of your book again real quick.
It's called A Nation Forsaken. It's published by WND Books. It's also available on Amazon.com.
Okay. Anyway, tell us what an EMP attack by him might look like if it's successful. Say, what would it be over California or what?
Well, he has. To answer your question, he has demonstrated a missile capability, which the intelligence community assesses that it can at least reach the West Coast with a three-stage. Now, he also launched a package The North Koreans claim was a satellite. They were able to put it into orbit, and that if that's the case, then that is a kind of although they did it under the rubric that it was a scientific experiment for launching a satellite, but we've seen where this has been practiced by other countries to use it as a capability to try to drop a nuclear weapon. Deorbit it and then drop the weapon, and that can be done if that's in fact what he did. Then this satellite could or this package could orbit and go anywhere across the United States, and then on command be deorbited and explode at high altitude maximum. The optimal would be about 150 miles up, depending upon its strength, to give you that EMP effect, the electromagnetic pulse effect, and this is a high energy burst of electromagnetic energy such as microwaves, gamma rays, and what have you, that can absolutely fry our unguarded, unprotected electronics, particularly our national grid system. And the North Koreans for years have known about this, and as have the Iranians, as have all the other countries, Pakistan, India, all those countries that have nuclear weapons. They know what the impact of the effects of from a nuclear explosion are is this electromagnetic pulse. So consequently, they're very keen on using that if they felt that it would go after what in effect is the American Achilles heel, and that is because of our high reliance on technology, which much of it's unguarded. Up until now, we really haven't. As a nation, we really haven't considered that as a major threat. But now I think folks are beginning to take a second look.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been watching. Have you noticed? You watched the videos at all that he's been?
Oh yeah.
Making
absolutely.
Up. those are really ludicrous. In fact, he shows them attack him in Washington, D.C. Do you think that, let's say that he deaded, you know, set one off over Washington, D.C., so to speak, how much of the country would it wipe out, you know, electric capability for the whole country, part of the country?
It'd probably be part of the country. It certainly would be the East Coast, and probably most effectively the Eastern Grid. Eastern Grid, you know, we have three grids in this country, Eastern Grid, Western Grid, and the Texas Grid. The Eastern Grid actually provides services to 70% of the U.S. population.
70%?
Yep.
Wow.
So if that was knocked out, and it certainly could be done with a calculated high altitude explosion over the East Coast, then that could create some real problems for all of us.
Okay, well, let's go into some. I want to go into some of the details of your book, just in case people haven't listened. For one, an EMP, does that just knock out? Now I know, and you know, of course, but does that just knock out your wall electricity? Does that make it where my car will never run again, or knock out all my computers? What does an EMP do?
All the above. It'll knock out all your transformers. It'll fry your grid. Any unprotected grid. It'll affect all of the automated control systems that we have. The things that we take for granted, such automated controls for our ATMs, or pumping our gas, or running our traffic lights. All of that could be knocked out.
Really?
These SCADAs, as we call them, automated control systems, are also govern the and regulate the flow of oil and natural gas through our hundreds of thousands of miles of pipeline that crisscross the United States. And if you trip those, then you have secondary explosions possibly, and fires that could occur. And because if you cause too much of a buildup, for example, in a natural gas pipeline, you're going to have an explosion. And that's actually occurred in isolated cases in recent years.
Right. Well, then, you know, so one little country with one little bomb, if it could get through, could just devastate America. It's amazing that we're not prepared for it.
No, we're not. And, again, it's the question is, does he, first of all, does he feel lucky? And secondly, does he have the technology and capability?
Right.
Now, some folks, experts, would argue that he's working on it, but he's not quite there yet. But, you know, the question then is, are they basing that on U.S. standards? And if that's the case, nothing will ever equal U.S. standards. But he can certainly do something that equates to functional equivalency, if you will.
Right.
that may not be as swanky and super duper as what we might be able to produce.
Right.
But it certainly gives you... it'll certainly have some effect.
Well, you know, I think that this, we need to, you know, really wake up and take a look at this, because, you know, it depends on what reports that you read. Either Iran is getting close to a bomb, has a bomb, and, you know, they're also a country that it wouldn't surprise me, especially with their religious beliefs, that they would, you know, start some kind of catastrophic thing. And so, and it looks like the North Koreans have been working pretty close with them anyway.
Well, they have. There has been collaboration and coordination in the past. For example, Iran's missiles actually came originally from North Korea. That's what they based it on, from the old Scud Seas. And then they built upon the base of their other missiles was the Scud Sea, and then they just modified that rather than going into entirely new productions like we do. So they built upon what they had, and then went to a second stage and then a third stage, and that's what they. You still have a liquid stage at the first stage, which is the basic Scud that they use, and the Iranians do, and the same with the North Koreans, by the way. So they don't go into a completely they don't have the money, and they don't have the research and capability to go into entirely new research or the technology. So they build upon what they've already done and just modify it as they move along.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. My question is do you think, with all our rhetoric and things that's going on, do you think that well, they were talking about maybe we would do a preemptive strike. Do you think that that's feasible? Do you think we might do that?
No.
I don't either. I have another big question for you. Now, they said that I read a report where they were moving, the Chinese were moving troops close to to the border with North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because what are the troops for? Not to back up North Korea, surely, are they? Or what are those for?
Well, they have a treaty agreement. They have a security agreement with North Korea. That's one element. The other element would be they may be lining troops along the border in the event that there is hostility. They don't want to be flooded with millions of North Korean refugees. They wouldn't be able to handle it. It would be a humanitarian catastrophe if that were to occur.
Right. Well, I don't think, personally, and, I spend a lot of time in the news due to all the radio talk and everything, but I don't think that, Russia and China and those nations, are really wanting this kind of a war,
No, not at all.
At all. I mean, because of what they're trying other ways to bring us down with.
But you have the Chinese in just in the last 24 hours actually called all the sides together to come to Beijing and have a meeting and sit down and talk about this to try to lessen tensions. They have no interest in a war. The Chinese certainly don't. It's the last thing in the world they need, like we do. It's the last thing in the world we need. So they're trying to have cooler heads prevail and in an effort to get all the parties to sit down at the same table and try to thrash things out. And now there was a meeting in Beijing, or one was called, of the South Korean, the North Korean, U.S. Representatives, ambassadors to Beijing to sit down and talk. So I haven't heard what the outcome of that meeting is at this point, but it shows that the Chinese are not enthusiastic about a war on the Korean Peninsula.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think any parties are. I think the only one else that would maybe want a war would be Iran, and I just don't see it.
No, so, I don't think the Iranians want a war either. They know they would be devastated.
Right, absolutely. And so, but will this, do you think at all, has anybody, let's go with this. I know your position of what you was in the United States government. Has any of them looked at your book or even started considering this now?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I know some folks have looked at it and are alarmed, but
we really need to send them a copy.
It's an issue that they're aware of, and they're very aware of it. I know the Defense Department has taken some efforts toward hardening their operational systems,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, our bases across the country rely 99% on our national grid, and that's why if it's affected, it also will affect our military capabilities as well to respond, especially if it comes from an attack or it comes from an unknown source. I mean, right now, if something were to happen in the next few days, we know it would be North Korea. If you had another element out there that in which a ship came by and on one of our coasts and shot a missile from the deck and then took off, it'd be very difficult to determine the nationality of what that was.
Right, absolutely.
Unless we had good intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case.
Well, I wonder a lot about our intelligence nowadays. I mean, it seems like that it's not as good as it was during when we had the Cold War and such.
Well, all of our assets at that time were oriented toward the Soviet Union, and that's been one of the fundamental problems with the intelligence today is that we have so many other things going on in the world today, from countries that want to take us on to transnational threats and to develop intelligence, especially human intelligence, and reliable human intelligence to deal with all that is a monumental job. and to recruit anybody can almost take a decade sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Roy, I think we just about got covered and got all we need. Do you have more that you would like to input, or do you want to call this good?
No, I think we're going to have to watch the situation in North Korea very, very closely. It could get worse before it gets better. I would be interested to see. I would think it would be useful if the United States and South Korea says, okay, we're going to take the initiative and try to to defuse the situation. We're going to call off the joint exercise and see if that works.
Right.
And see if Kim Jong-un backs off it from that point. Then he can get up and boast and say and declare victory, and that's fine. At least there hasn't been a shot fired, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess one thing that we really didn't cover was the fact that the conventional weapon side of it, if North Korea launched an attack mm-hmm. on South Korea, wouldn't that be pretty horrific before we could stop that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, the indication is, and some experts on North Korea basically said that given all of the bombastic rhetoric from the supreme leader of North Korea, the 28-year-old, that he's got to do something. And the thought was he might maybe stage an attack on a missile attack or a bombing attack on a South Korean island, which has happened before a number of times,
right.
And then just declare victory and move on. But no one. I think everyone is hoping that he blinks and stands down. But I know we're not going to take any preemptive thing. But if he were to. But anything can happen. Anything could set him off at this point. I think that's one of the things we've got to be concerned about. For example, the Kaesong Industrial Park, for example, which is in North Korea, but it has about 123 South Korean companies. And you have workers both from North and from the South who go to that complex every day. Well, the North now has stopped the flow of South Koreans from going to the factory, but they will not allow some 850 workers, South Korean workers, to leave. And now we hear from the South Korean Ministry of Defense that, they might stage an attack to release the hostages if it comes to that. So that could be a provocation that could just set him off and really get this thing out of control.
Right. Well, something like this, you know, one wrong action could escalate it into something
Absolutely.
That nobody really wants to see.
That's correct.
Well, I appreciate it. Folks, this book that he has written, and I read it, it's A Nation Forsaken, EMP, The Escalating Threat of an American Catastrophe. He is a staff writer for WorldNet Daily and the G2 Bulletin. He's a former senior policy analyst in the Office of Secretary of Defense of the United States of America. Well, Michael, thanks for being on with me. I really appreciate it. And I hope I don't have to have you back on and say, well, what was the damage, you know?
No, I hope not either. I hope this thing reaches a peaceful solution.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, may the Father bless and keep you, and thanks for being on with me.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, folks, we'll be right back in about 3 minutes, but first we have to have a radio and station break. We'll be right back.
Your rod and your staff, They comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of Yahweh forever. In the secret place of the Most High, who abides under the shadow of El Shaddai. He is saying of Yahweh, my refuge and my stronghold, my Elohim, in whom I trust. For he delivers you from the snare of a trapper, from the destruction pestilence. He covers you with his feathers, and under his wings you take refuge. His truth is a shield and armor. You are not afraid of the dread by night, of the arrow that flies by day, of the pestilence that walks in darkness, of destruction that ravages at midday. 1,000 fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it does not come near you. Only with your eyes you look on, and see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made Yahweh my refuge, the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil befalls you, and a plague does not come near your tent. For he commands his messengers concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They bear you up in their hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You tread upon lion and cobra, young lion and serpent you trample underfoot. Because he clings to me in love, therefore I deliver him. I exalt him, because he has known my name. When he calls on me, I answer him. I am with him in distress. I deliver him and esteem him. With long life I satisfy him and show him my deliverance.
This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Mission Watch on the American Voice Radio Network. Please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Of course, folks, the poor or the homeless are poor, but the poor that we're talking about is the people from all over Wichita that come in looking for help. Some people that have been homeless that have known us for years past, as this is starting in June, our 14th year, and other people that have just heard about it and heard about the mercy could find it at the Father's Little Mission Church. You see, they come looking for all kinds of things. They come looking for food, counseling, the gospel, Bibles, first aid, all kinds of things they come looking for. So this is what we do. So please help us help the people that the Father sends us. We get no help from any organized churches or government agencies. It's just folks like you that has supported us for the last 13 years that makes this mission church work. And so, folks, please pray about it. We are the very last hope for so many. We are, folks, all responsible to care one for another, as we are brother's keepers. The Father notices all donations that come from your heart. And people wanted to know, as of lately, they wanted to know about the bus. A fellow showed up at church and wanted to know, was I still driving the bus? What was the story? Well, the story on the bus is it still has no heater. The story on the bus is that I have no taillights, therefore I cannot drive it past dark. technically daylight savings saved me and made it where I could drive the bus, because I was driving it just, I mean, it was right deadline, almost dark, and I was having to drive it anyway. But now daylight savings is set in, but it also needs some bushings in the front. The bus needs a lot. It needs about $2,000 worth of work at the minimum, or we can replace the bus for $3,500, somewhere in that neighborhood. At least the one that I saw a few months ago could have been reached for $3,500. And so pray about it. Yes, the mission bus is still in need of replaced or fixed. $2,000, maybe $2,500 to fix absolutely everything. Give us a heater and, you know, the radiator, it leaks. It needs to be taken out and sent to a radiator shop. The heater needs work. I mean, there's just lots of stuff that it needs. And so, you know, we could get one already fixed for $3,500. So pray about it. I know money is tight right now with Obama taxes and Obamacare and all those things, but pray about it, folks. Also, we're coming up to where we're going to be opening the women's shelter. We are going to, there's 20 women right now out on the street, or there was a couple of days ago when the shelter, see, Wichita does operate a winter overflow for women, but it went past, it became April 1st and they closed it April 1st. And so those women immediately go right out to the street. So we need to help those women. We need to get the place open fast. One thing that's holding us up, we were praying for a young couple, a couple, a man and a woman, to come, and that's, you have, if you're a couple, you have to be married. A married couple to come and stay in one of the two-bedroom apartments, bills paid, free, that would help us watch over the girls at night and check them in and check them out. And for that, we would give you free rent, room, you know, a roof and everything. You just got to have an income to pay for your food or whatever. You could, there's a lot, Wichita has some jobs, so pray about it. You must be a Sabbath keeper. That is number one on the list. You must be a Sabbath keeper, meaning keeping Friday dark to Saturday dark. So pray about it. We will consider a single woman for that, but you need to get a hold of us. That would be a special thing, so pray about it. You know, we do so much down there. People want to know what we do, and we do so much, many different things, because we don't have a guideline. You walk in the door, and you tell us a need, and if we can fulfill that need, then we fulfill that need. If not, we'll try and pray it in for you. So please, pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church. You can donate online by mailing a check, or by mailing a check or money order. You can find out all this information at prophecyhour.com. That's prophecyhour.com. And if you're one of these folks out there that listen to radio and you don't listen to your radio on the internet and you don't do the internet, then you can simply call me and I'll give you whatever information that you need. You can call me at 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And now we're going to get into some of the other news and other things that are going on. Okay, moving right along with other news. This is one of the articles that I read on the Prophecy Club today when Stan recorded it. Today is actually Wednesday. This program will be aired on Sunday as normal. The Mission Watch program will be. But anyway, this is one article that stood out on me. We'll use this one. We'll go on from there. Anyway, it says, humans beware, Skynet is one step closer to actually happening. Skynet is a fictional, self-aware artificial intelligence system which features in the Terminator franchise and serves as the franchise's main antagonist. Scarcely depicted visually in any of the Terminator media movies, Skynet's operations are almost exclusively performed by war machines, cyborgs, usually a Terminator, and other computer systems, with its ultimate goal, the extinction of the human race. The Pentagon is readying a four-year project to boost artificial intelligence systems by building machines that can teach themselves and get smarter over time, while they're making it easier for ordinary people to build these things. The Pentagon is using its research division, DARPA, which is Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, to back this project. DARPA is inviting scientists to a Virginia conference to brainstorm them on April 10th. Machine learning can be used to make better systems for intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, a core military necessity. Now, let's talk about this for a moment. A core military necessity. What do you, if you have a machine that can think for himself, as Batman or Robin would say, shades of Terminators or whatever, do we really want to see a society like iRobot? What are they going to do? They're going to put in something in the machinery that says that you can't kill human beings just so that we can have some crazy scientist like an iRobot come along and make a machine that can think for itself and get past that protocol? These are realistic things. Will the machines turn around and turn on us as in the Terminator? These are real possibilities that could happen. But the problem with that is I believe that the timeline that we're in is that we are in the time of the end, and so therefore we are going to be taken to this other level with Yeshua returning before that happens. But if Yeshua doesn't return, let's say Yeshua doesn't return in 10 years, could this be an Antichrist machine or system? Who knows what it is? But people, it's a scary thought to have machines that can think for themselves. What if they have, what would be the first thing? They have droids that can take, not droids, but, you know, what are those things that fly through the air, you know, we're talking about? Have those things flying through the air, looking around. We're going to have a whole sky full of those things. Have you really looked at things, folks? This is pretty spooky. But again, so they're going to be spending, they've got a four-year project that they're funding. What happened to the sequester money? They're still funding projects. This is just ludicrous. But anyway, it's something to think about. And here's another article that kind of goes along with it. You know, you can get a cyborg beetle or pet fish that's engineered to glow under ultraviolet light. And it sounds like something you'd see in a movie theater about the future. Well, if that's the case and you think that's the future, then the future is here right now. Those are just two of the developments that the journalist exposes in her new book, Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beast. In an easy-to-digest language, this woman that wrote this book looks at the various ways scientists are reshaping other living things and opening up a dialogue on ethics in the prospects. Now, this is weird. I looked it up. There's fish that you can go on there and buy and put them in your aquarium and turn off the light, and they glow in the dark at night floating around. I mean, and that's because they mess with the DNA. Well, the DNA belongs to the father, and he says to make everything after his own kind. This is in the first week. He said that was one of the first laws and rules of human beings is everything, and for nature, for everything after its own kind. And when the father saw this, then he said it was good. They were fruitful and multiplying. It was good. But when you are engineering things and messing with it, just like Monsanto and all the weird different sorts of foods and plants, it's like corn, genetically altered corn. The corn resists a bug. The bug then mutates, and then it goes after the corn, so they make the corn even worse, and it continues on mutation. We are creating real monsters, just like antibiotics. Antibiotics right now, doctors are getting harder and harder to prescribe them for. People have to deal with colds longer and longer because doctors don't want to give out antibiotics unless it's absolutely has to. And the reason for that is very simple, because the various bacteria are getting resistant to antibiotics. And so it's terrible things. Terrible things are coming, but we are in that time of the end. Okay? All right, let's see if we got another one. You know what? Now let's talk about Saudi Arabia for a minute. Saudi Arabia is just another one of those. You know, we've excluded him. Now, there's some kind of a Bush deal or some kind of a deal that, and I say Bush deal because Bush excluded them. There was no blame put toward Saudi Arabia for 9/11. But yet, money originated there for 9/11, as did a lot of other things. The terrorists, they were in part responsible. They've never been held accountable for any of those things. And I think it's because of oil money and so on and so forth. And I say Bush because it was the Bushes were into with the oil money there involved. Anyway, but here's one about Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia beheads murderer and then crucifies his body. Well, once you're beheaded, why do they need to crucify the body? But Saudi authorities have, it says right here, Mail Online 03-29-2013, Saudi authorities have beheaded a murderer and crucified his body after he killed and raped a Pakistani national. The kingdom's interior ministry announced the execution, stating that the man had murdered and sodomized another male. Both actions are punishable by death. So I guess they decided to put him to death twice, right? These actions are also an upswing, as many Christians and others are being crucified in the Arab states. So why are the churches ignoring it? Why are we ignoring our Bible that says that we in the end times that people would be, Christians specifically, would be beheaded? Now, this man wasn't a Christian they was talking about, but I've seen many reports of Christians being beheaded, burned alive, mutilated, crucified, and so on and so forth in all of the Arab Spring nations and other nations, even in Indonesia. And so these Muslim terrorists, it isn't just terrorists. This is in their standard thing in their religion. And I'm not trying to just go against the Muslim people. Sure, I know some of them are peaceful, but if they actually adhere to what their book says, then they must kill the people of the book. And guess who the people of the book are? That the people of the book are the Jews, and the people of the book are us Christians, who they call America the Great Satan. Absolutely. So you need to pray about these things. You need to hold it up. Be aware of what's going on around you. Let's move right along. What about the ammo? Now, the DHS explained that it plans to buy 1.6 billion rounds of ammo, and they're buying it in bulk to significantly lower costs. Yes, they finally answered. The Department of Homeland Security has responded to a letter dated November 13, 2012, from Senator Tom Colburn, Republican, Oklahoma, regarding the agency's ammunition purchases. Now, I like Oklahoma. There's a lot of good left-wing, I repent. There may be some left-wing people there, but there's a lot of good right-wing people there, or I just call them conservative people there that stand up for things, as well the senators over there. But anyway, this Senator Colburn published a response on the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs website yesterday, April 1st, 2013. The response dated February 4th says that the DHS buys ammunition in bulk to significantly lower costs. Really? $1.5 billion? Really? That many? The letter states DHS routinely establishes strategic sourcing contracts that combine the requirements of all its components for commonly purchased goods, services such as ammunition, computer equipment, information, technology. These strategic sourcing contracts have helped leverage purchasing power of DHS to efficiently procure equipment and supplies and significantly lowering rounds. Yeah, really, 106.5 billion rounds of ammunition. Now, wait a minute. The people are having a problem buying ammunition across the country. Other law enforcement agencies are having a problem buying ammunition. Why? Because the DHS has bought it all up. Well, if not, the USDA has bought millions of rounds up. What are they going to do? The USDA, go out and shoot a bunch of cows or shoot at the wheat? And the post office, the post office bought a bunch of rounds of Hollow Point Avenue Mission. What are they going to do? They're going to go shooting at, they're going to start shooting at the dogs that come to bite them, right? And they need a couple of million, there must be a couple of million dogs out there that are causing them a problem. So, folks, I wouldn't believe, if you believe what the government's telling you about that, I got some swamp land out here in Florence, Kansas that I will sell you really, really cheap. I'll give you a good price on it. Okay, let's go on with this. The United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday signed off a sweeping first-of-its-kind treaty to regulate the international arms trade, brushing aside worries from UN gun rights advocates that the pact could lead to a national firearms registry and disrupt the American gun market. The U.S. Senate is united in strong opposition to a treaty that puts us on level ground with dictatorships who abuse human rights and arm terrorists. But there is real concern that the administration feels pressure to sign a treaty that violates our constitutional rights, and that was Mr. Moran, which is from the United States Senate. Given the apparent support of the Obama administration for the ATT, members of the U.S. Senate must continue to make clear that any treaty that violates our Second Amendment freedoms will be an absolute non-starter for ramification. It's far beyond what it's purported to be. This requires countries to keep a national gun registry of gun owners. That therefore goes by. That's what they're trying to pass in Congress. Look for this for Obama to try and do this. In addition, it could be used as justification for banning semi-autos and banning handguns without any further legislation. And that was said by Mike Hammond, Chief Counsel of Gun Owners of America. And Gun Owners of America, we have Larry Pratt on here from time to time. We'll have to ask him about that. It could also be interpreted as a self-implementing, and means it'll start by itself. And by executive order under Obama could simply ban all handguns using this treaty. Really, watch for it. There is so much stuff coming under this Obama administration, it's enough to make you puke. Folks, if you don't watch the news, if you don't listen to the news, if you don't look around what's going on around you, we are in a different time. I just read that now because of the sequester, that there's loads and loads of seniors that are on Medicare that are being turned away and not giving cancer treatments. And this is a very large number of folks. They say the sequester did it, and it wouldn't surprise me, but they have ways around it. They ask, the doctors ask if the cancer patients could be exempt. And no, you can't fix it later. If these people don't get their treatment now, they're dead. But what are they? I guess they're just useless eaters, right? Useless eaters, really? Is that what we're to think of our older people? Hey, I'm 58. At what point do I become a useless eater? They probably would like to get rid of me anyway because I talk too much on radio. And you, as you folks should do too. I'm not saying you should talk on radio, but you should do talking within your church, your synagogue, or wherever it is that you go to. You should do your talking at the local school board meetings, at the local, all the local meetings, the city council, and so on and so forth. You know, I was going to be believe it or not, I was going to be a write-in candidate to our small town's city council, and I missed the date. I thought it was today, and so I didn't get to get my name entered, and we was going to try it. Next time around, I'm going to try and run for city council person in Florence, Kansas. No, I don't want to be the mayor, but I am going to try and run for city council for my side of town. You know, one of the things that I'm going to run on is that we can have roosters. Yeah, we have a no rooster law here in this city, noisy animal law, and I'm going to run on that we can have roosters as long as they're not bugging your neighbor, it's okay. Some of the things here sound a little ridiculous, but, you know, what can I say? Well, my son got a rooster ticket. It cost him almost $200 to get out of it or more, and he didn't really get out of it. He had to pay a fine. So Florence should have roosters. Anyway, and remind you that we do drive 120 miles round trip to care for the people in Wichita, Kansas, that the Father has told us to do. Pray about it. Go to the Prophecy Club website. Go to where it says audios. Listen to the audio archives, and you'll hear me presenting the news such as this 2 days a week on the Prophecy Club radio program. So, folks, we love you. I will be, of course, this was taped on Wednesday, and I'm getting ready to do another radio program later tonight and on somebody else's radio program. They wanted to have me on as a guest, so I'm going to do that. So I got to get ready for that. It's time to really get out of here. We love you. But remember, folks, pray about supporting the Wichita Mission Church. please, always, always be a blessing to others. How can you be a blessing to others? I mean, how can you not be a blessing to others if you have a, if you indeed have the Holy Spirit in you? You should be a blessing to others. I don't see how you couldn't be. We must remember that there is only one God, and that is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach, who gave his life for repented sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. He was put in the earth at Wednesday dark, or a little before Wednesday dark. Wednesday dark to Thursday dark to Friday dark to Sabbath dark. That's 3 days and three nights. And that was the sign given to a wicked and adult generation. It was the sign of Jonah. As for as Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, so also should be the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And he was put in there a little bit before dark on Wednesday night, and that was during Passover. So are you praying to the right Yeshua? Think about it. Pray about it. And the Father does know your heart, and so does His Son, but that don't mean that you could not be in some kind of deception. So pray about it, all. Remember, that was His only sign given 3 days and three nights, not a day and a half and a little while. 3 days and three nights. Remember to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul. This is the first and great commandment. The second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That's like praying for Messiah's return. Lord our God, Father Yahweh, King of the universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that Father Yahweh blesses and keeps you, and His face shines upon you, and is gracious to you, and gives you peace. Until next time, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time with Messiah's Branch.